and welcome to How to Be Successful with me, Vicky Paul. I'm an intuitive, artist, energy healer and author, and I'm on a mission to help you live with more joy, purpose and meaning. How to Be Successful is a straight-talking, heartfelt and enlightening podcast full of soul-centered wisdom, home truths, life-changing insights and free-flowing conversations with some of the most inspiring, knowledgeable and honest voices in well-being, spirituality, self-love and personal development. It's a show for people who are no longer satisfied chasing society's version of success because they're ready to embrace their gifts and thrive on their own terms. Today's guest is Kate Hogan, an integrative psychotherapist and coach for the last 6 years. As well as running her own practice, Kate leads private and corporate workshops covering areas such as stress management, resilience, and work-life balance. Kate had a challenging start in life and soon learned to escape into videos, books, and food, something that I know many of us can relate to. She learned to people-please to avoid any kind of conflict and was always very sensitive to others' moods and feelings. Her own journey has been helped by amazing therapists and coaches, and her aim is to make therapy not only accessible, but something that's not considered either a luxury or self-indulgent. She's particularly passionate about helping people who struggle to empower themselves, and that could mean gaining confidence, becoming more assertive, ditching unhealthy habits and relationship patterns, or even changing to a more fulfilling career. Kate spent over a decade working in the fashion industry and is well aware of the pressures of modern working life. And she really aims to give people the tools to navigate life and not only get through it, but to thrive. I loved our conversation and I know you will too.
When I interview people, they always send their CV. You know, I always ask people to send their CV, which gives the kind of business aspect of what it is that you do. And I really want to kind of get into that because, first of all, I want to know what an integrative psychotherapist is. Mm. But I was really interested by the information that you have on your website, katehogan.co.uk. And it talks about the fact that you had a really challenging start to life. And before we jumped on to record this, you and I were talking because we both believe that those early years are where we not only learn the lessons that we're here to learn and overcome as soulful beings, having a human experience, but this is really where the challenges arise. And then that sort of challenge pattern repeats itself throughout our life until we get to a stage where we go, okay, enough's enough. I'm going to have to heal, move on and open up. So I'd love you just to kind of delve in and share as much or as little as you want about your childhood. And then obviously how you came to work in the fashion industry, because I love fashion and I'm really excited to hear what it is that you do.
Me too. Thanks, Vicky. Yeah. Yes, we were talking about this and how those first 5 years are so formative. And I think for me, like the first 5 years of my life were probably the most challenging. My life did start to get easier after that. So I was born into an alcoholic family. My dad was an alcoholic. The way I describe it is my dad was addicted to alcohol. My mum was addicted to my dad. So they had a very tempestuous relationship. There was a lot of dysfunction, a lot of violence actually in our house. And I'm the youngest of three sisters. So my sisters are much older than me and they were 13 and 14 when I was born. So I was a bit of a last minute addition. So I grew up in, you know, I was born into this house. It was very chaotic. My dad was drinking. He was getting into fights. He was, you know, there was domestic abuse going on. It wasn't ideal. My mum was very depressed. She would often sort of check out, you know, she wasn't very present a lot of the time. So what happened was when I came along, things had sort of hit the worst point, I guess, in terms of their relationship and the dysfunction. And when I got to four, I think my mum just really realised that she didn't want this anymore. And I think my older sister, who was 17 by then, had said to her, don't let Kate go through this as well. You know, we've been through all this stuff. Please take Kate away. So we actually, my mum and I moved into a women's refuge and we lived there for 6 months or so, which was really difficult, you know, really hard as a four-year-old. And I do remember it. I do remember not seeing my sisters or my dad and feeling very confused and being in this place that didn't feel good. I started infant school there. So I didn't, you know, I started a new school, not knowing anyone from nursery. It was tough. And thank God, my, you know, when during the time that my mum left my dad, that gave my dad the kick up the bum that he needed, and he got sober. So he joined AA, he got sober. They eventually divorced. We moved back into the house. He moved out. But things did start to get better from there. My mum started getting some therapy and went to her own 12-step recovery. So things did improve. I do think, you know, as we were saying, the kind of, I hate to say the word damage, because I do believe our childhoods are also a gift and we get so many lessons, but a lot had been done by then. So I think I grew up, I was quite a sweet kid, but really sort of lacking in self-esteem. And I think that all came from, you know, the environment that I'd been brought up. I was quite scared. Yeah, you know, I was always scared of men, because I just thought all men were angry, because my dad was, you know, this angry guy.
When did you, because obviously four, you're very aware of what's going on, but you're probably not fully understanding of what's going on. But
no,
when did you become aware of, okay, that was really not healthy, that was a codependent relationship, that was an abusive relationship, I didn't potentially receive the love and support that a child should do. When were you aware that you perhaps didn't have the same level of love, upbringing, care as perhaps your peers in school did?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it was as I got older, and probably when I started going to friends' houses for tea after school and seeing that they had a dad there and their mum and dad didn't scream at each other and it was quite harmonious, and someone would do something wrong and they wouldn't get screamed at, and I thought, wow, this is different, you know. And to be fair, my dad wasn't, he sort of wasn't so angry towards us. It was mostly directed towards my mum. But as a kid, you know, you don't really distinguish. You're just scared of this figure.
I think everybody could say, you know, hand on heart, we've all experienced self-esteem issues at some point in our lives. Yeah. What did that look like for you? How did that manifest in you and in your world?
Yeah. I think as a sort of child and teenager, it was very much around my parents. So I definitely comfort ate as a child, probably as a result of everything. So I was a bit of a chubby kid, you know, and that I was always extremely conscious of. My mum and I essentially lived together in our house when my dad had left, and we grew, it was a council house. And then I went to secondary school in quite an affluent area. So all the friends I was making had, you know, these big houses, lots of money, nice cars. And I think that really highlighted my low self-esteem as well.
Money issues and issues around money. I have to say, I'm really intrigued that, you know, your self-esteem kind of manifested around your appearance, but you ended up in the fashion industry. How did that come about?
that's a really good point. I didn't ever plan to go into fashion. I studied English literature at university. I had few ideas of what I wanted to do, but not really. Again, I think that low self-esteem probably resulted in a bit of lack of direction or confidence in a direction. And I ended up, I think I joined a sort of temp agency, and I ended up getting this job in this fashion agency because I've worked in shops and, you know, done a bit of retail, didn't know what I was doing. So I ended up in this agency in Shoreditch, and it felt like coming home. There were these two amazing women that ran the company who are still very much sort of mentors now. They've since shut the company, but I just fell into it and found somewhere that I felt like I could be me. And, you know, I loved fashion. I kind of grew from there and worked my way up.
So in terms of relationships, because, you know, I gather, given the environment you were brought up in and the dynamic that you witnessed between your mum and dad, there probably wasn't a healthy barometer in terms of that type of relationship. So what were you like and how did that kind of unfold for you, particularly, you know, when you get to that kind of teenage years? So for anyone, any of the audience listening, you know, if they've got kids who are just at that kind of tickly age, how did that manifest itself? And did you move through those challenges to become a more healthy partner, in inverted commas, or how did that look?
And I think this, you know, you've hit on something. This is probably one of my biggest lessons in this lifetime, I think, is around relationships. And it's having that blueprint of my mum and dad, which was so far off. And I did find myself in my early relationships definitely sort of repeating those patterns So I would go for guys who were emotionally unavailable, who were drinkers, who were really into partying, and that sort of codependent pattern that I saw with my mum and dad, I just replicated.
Did you know you were replicating it, or was it unconscious?
No, it was all unconscious. It was all unconscious. And I, you know, I think in my mind, I thought, well, you know, this guy, he's not hitting me. You know, I had one boyfriend that was lying and gambling and all sorts, but he wasn't hitting me. So actually, I've done all right, you know, considering where I've come from. My bar was really low.
When did you recognise that the bar was low? And when did you realise, okay, this is not how it's supposed to be?
I think I realised I was in a long-term relationship. And this is the guy I just mentioned. We were engaged. And so we were about to get married. This was back in 2009 or 10. And I had this, I mean, this is where my intuition kicked in. Every day I would wake up and think, oh my God, I can't marry this guy. You know, I can't do it. And it was such a strong feeling. And it was actually my dad, you know, I'd since developed a really good relationship with my dad since he stopped drinking and he got into spirituality, and which was wonderful. It's actually my dad that said to me, you don't have to marry him. You know, you don't have to do this. So I think at that was a real catalyst for me. And that was a real turning point that I realized. And my friends have been saying to me for ages, why do you put up with this crap? You know, you're better than that. Why? I don't know. I don't understand why you just keep, you know, putting up with him lying to you, or, you know, this relationship.
What was the conversation like? Do you remember the conversation when you told him the wedding's off?
Oh God, it was awful. I do. I remember it vividly. I said, I think I'd sort of already preempted it and said, I just need a couple of days away because I'm feeling, you know, I just need some time on my own. And then in that time, I realised I had to do this. And I knew that, of course, if the wedding was off, the relationship was off. You know, we couldn't just then carry on and have a relationship and not commit to each other.
At that point in time, had you realised that there was help available? Had you been doing any work on yourself?
I think at that point, I didn't. I just knew it wasn't right. And I think I'd maybe done a little bit of, I can't remember, there were a couple, maybe one book I'd read, which was Women Who Love Too Much. It's like a real old, old one that you might be familiar with. Maybe I'd read that, but I didn't know too much about it. I just know that I didn't want my life to go down this path. So it was really after the end of that relationship that I started doing some real work on it. That's when I went into therapy, and that's when I really started looking at those patterns and working on changing it.
And how old were you at this point?
I was 29.
So at this point, when you were 29 and you had this relationship with your dad, how long had that relationship been positive for by that point in time?
Since my early teens, I would say. I mean, I you know, grew up, as I say, I wasn't a fan of my dad because I'd seen how awful he'd been to my mum. And he actually worked really hard to repair our relationship, which I'm so grateful for. So I think by the time I got into my teens and I sort of understood a bit more about what happened, and he was always really transparent and really honest about his stuff and, you know, maybe what happened to him in his childhood that had caused the alcoholism, so I had more of an understanding. So by the time I got to my teens, I had a really solid, you know, really great relationship. And then, so that year, the year of being 29, which I sometimes call my Anna Terribilis, I mean, it was a horrific year. I split up with my fiancé in the May, and in the July, my dad passed away.
Oh, so, I'm sorry to hear
that. Thank you. So it was just this sort of double grief. You know, I was grieving over this relationship, and then you know, my dad died, and that kind of trumped everything.
What a profound thing to happen. It's interesting. The reason I love these conversations, and I really am keen to share the sort of spiritual transformation and this sort of personal development and the potential that we have inside us. So often it is triggered and wrapped up by some form of fairly intense emotional experience that we need to be almost shaken awake.
Yes.
Know, because we do not pay attention to the signs throughout our lives, and then it's almost as if something fairly cataclysmic in our own personal journey has to happen.
Yes.
So How did you cope with that, particularly given the fact that you'd had a history of low self-esteem? What did that, did you find that you dipped back into the sort of coping mechanism?
So this, and, you know, I totally agree with you, Vicky. This was such a massive catalyst and it completely cracked me open. And what I did was simultaneously started to heal myself and I started to go to therapy and started to work on my childhood. And at the same time, I started to go back into some pretty destructive coping mechanisms. So I would be partying. I would, you know, have one night stands. I'd be sort of looking, you know, looking for a new relationship in all the wrong ways. You know, and I think those two things did go hand in hand for a while for me while I was sort of learning about myself and doing the healing work. I had a wonderful therapist. I learned all about my patterns and the codependency stuff that I would do in relationships and why I would be attracted to these bad boys whilst still kind of, you know, I guess I call it acting out. I was, and I'd been in relationships throughout my whole 20s. So I feel like I sort of was catching up on a bit of lost time as well. But it certainly didn't help my self-esteem because I'd be getting validation through sex or one night stands or nothing that felt real or wholesome.
Everybody did that. I did that. We all did that.
We all do it. Yes,
yeah. Lose ourselves in some way, shape, or form, you know, whether it's drinking, eating, you know, having sex, taking drugs, shopping too much, buying shit you don't need. You know, these
I think
are
I did all of that.
Yeah. Tick, 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 tick.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong, it wasn't all bad. You know, I enjoyed some of it.
It's interesting that you also say that you were doing, you had these, these two lives. Yeah. Kind of running in parallel because a lot of my life was like that as well. And it was almost as if there was this part of me that was not ready to give up the escapist behavior and the dipping into the sort of spiritual side of things and the self-help books and the coaching and the healing and whatnot. Yeah. It was almost enough of an anchor to say, okay, well, you're doing something. And it did, that transition took me a number of years to eventually go, okay, now is the time. We do not need to be doing this to ourselves. And I think for me, I don't know how you feel about it, but for me, I was one of these people that, you know, the highs were high and the lows were low. Mm. And I loved the highs and I didn't realize that actually that was just not balanced. And the reason I needed things to be so high was because things got so low. And if I brought the low up towards a more balanced place, I didn't need the giddy heights because I was like, well, I love my, you know, going out and socializing with the friends. I love my life. Yeah. It's such great fun. I don't want to do the spiritual shit if I've got to get rid of that. You know,
so it's just
this confusion at the time about what it all meant. But I love this. And I talk about this in my book, How to Be Successful. Mm. The universe loves a contradiction. It is a contradiction. Yeah. So do not be put off by seeking out some form of support or guidance in whatever form that looks like to you. If you're still in the behavioral patterns, you're not potentially meant to all of a sudden stop the behavioral, bad behavioral patterns and just become this angel. It doesn't work like that. It takes commitment, time, effort, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. And I think that's so key to sort of let people know, because I do think there's this misconception out there that once you decide that you're going to change, you know, it all falls into place at once and all those destructive things go away. But I think they come, you know, they come up with a sort of vengeance, and part of me really didn't want to let go of all that stuff.
I'm going to be honest, I still come for eat. Yeah. I still come for eat.
Oh, you know, me too.
2 decades worth of work on myself, for God's sake. You know, and I still, if something happens, you know, I had some news recently that I've got a heart issue and I was so, oh my God. And the first thing I did was I got a bottle of red wine and a massive bar of chocolate. And I'm like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I don't care. Glug, 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 chomp, 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 chomp.
Yeah.
You know, we're human.
We're human.
What I did is keep that going for days and weeks on end. So
that's it. Yeah. I mean, I did it just yesterday. I was feeling sorry for myself. I got my period. I thought, go for a run, ended up in the park buying a coffee and an almond cake. And that's okay. It's not the end of the world.
So you obviously had some really good experiences with therapy, and I've had a hit and miss experience with therapy and counselling. I think, as you know yourself, you know, somebody who does counsel and does therapy, there's got to be a real connection between patient, client, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that can, if your intuition is not connected, you might end up picking the wrong person, as it were. So you had this great experience with therapy. How long did you do therapy for? And was this where you thought, actually, this might be something I could do? Or was it much later?
Yeah, I think it was when I was having therapy. I mean, I probably did it for maybe a year and a half. And I dip in and out of it now. So I'm not I'm in constant therapy of some kind. But sometimes that looks like coaching. Sometimes I've got a specific therapist I'm working with. So that particular one, it was about a year and a half. And I think that did plant the seed that's what I would like to do. So running along this kind of personal journey I was on with the relationship stuff, I also was kind of getting a bit bored with my job, feeling a bit unfulfilled. So that started to happen at the same time as well. Yeah, it was all within this 2 year period that everything changed. There's something about being 29. I think it's a Saturn return as well. I don't know if you've come across that.
I love all this sort of astrology and I dip in and out of it. But I definitely think that there's each of us have periods in our lives where I'm still going through like a wee boulder, a wee challenge boulder comes in. Yeah. And now having done a lot of work on myself, we're teachers, but we're also pupils. We're still learning.
Yeah.
The boulders don't roll back the way, I find it a lot easier to push them up the hill because of the work that I've done. So that, let's be clear, doing work on yourself and going to therapy gets you through to the next level. It's like one of these computer games where you go you go up a level and up a level and up a level. And the other thing is as well, I'm going through menopause, my brain's all over the place. I've completely forgotten what I was talking about. I can't remember where my path was. Oh, this is a really interesting conversation.
New level, new devil is the saying, isn't it?
Oh god, like, I love that level,
there's always something
new level, new devil, as Oprah Winfrey would say, tweet. Brilliant.
So we were saying about how I got into therapy, into wanting to be a therapist myself. And this was all kind of happening. I was reevaluating everything. So I loved my job. It was like a little family that I was in, we're in this lovely office and I got to go to New York and Paris and it was really exciting. But something was missing for me. So I would help designers get jobs and I would love coaching them and talking to them about it. But I didn't like some of the other aspects. So I didn't really love the sort of schmoozing because I'm actually a bit of an introvert. So because I was becoming more aligned with myself, that just felt more jolting for me. And so I tried to fix it. So I thought, I'll leave my job. I've got this amazing job within a big fashion brand working in-house. I thought, this is going to fix it. I hated it. So I lasted 3 months with that fashion brand. it was just really corporate. Again, it just felt very surface. I think I was in about 6 meetings a day. It was, full on, really long hours. And I knew in my soul this wasn't the thing. Like, this wasn't what I wanted to do. So at that point, I actually saw a life coach. And I think I came up with 3 ideas of what I wanted to do. So one was become a therapist, trained to be a therapist. One was start a dating agency. Because I've always had a passion. Right. And clearly, I've got some topics and issues around love. So that manifested, I love love. And I love setting people up. That's something I love to do. So that was my other one. I think my other one was becoming a writer. So I kind of explored those 3 options. And serendipity, I found a training course that someone had recommended. I enrolled the evening before enrollment shut. So it was all a bit sort of last minute, happened at the right time. So what happened was I went back to my old company. I bumped into my boss in Sainsbury's, my old boss. She said, "Oh my God, Kate, you look awful." Because I did. Thanks. I was working and I was like, "Thanks for that." But she was a bit like a mum to me. And I said, "Okay, I'll take that." She said, "Look, why don't you come back?" And then I told them about my plan to do training, which was at weekends. And they said, "Yep, come back to us, do your training when you're ready. If you want to leave us or go part time or whatever."
I love these women.
They're amazing. Yeah,
honestly, just to dip back very quickly, it's interesting that you said you met a life coach, and you had 3 very different paths in mind.
Yeah,
I'm passionate about purpose and meaning and finding purpose and finding meaning in our life. That really is what personal development, transformation, human potential is all about, when we align with those what they mean to us. And the other thing that I really am keen to try and dispel the myth of is this thing about your purpose. It's this one thing, this one job that you're supposed to do. Yeah. Purpose is a feeling. Purpose is a feeling. Meaning is a feeling. And you can manifest that feeling in so many different ways, whether it's a writer, a dating agent, or a therapist. Have all these thoughts. Yes. The very fact that you allowed yourself the imagination, you connected with your intuition, and you allowed that, oh, well, I could do this, and I could do that, and I could do the next thing. That's really the start of finding out what purpose means to you.
Oh, totally. Yeah. And I 100% agree with that. You don't, there's not this like one purpose that you have to go and it's not always a career. You know, you don't have to, that doesn't have to be your purpose. I remember, you know, Elizabeth Gilbert, I love her.
Eat, pray, love.
Oh, she's amazing. But she posted, it was a while back now, an apology to her fan base, if you like, because she kept talking about a purpose. And then she sort of backtracked and said, I'm telling all these people that you have to have a singular purpose and I'm wrong. And I loved that when she said that.
Well, that's her owning up. And that's incredible. Yes. There's somebody who's done, who is prolific in the self-help world. Yeah. And she's realizing this. And this has been something that I am passionate about because I had that challenge myself. I was like, I need a purpose. What is my purpose? Back in the day, I was a radio presenter and I loved that job. I lost that career quite abruptly, which is one of the things that set me off in the direction I am in now.
Yeah.
And I was like, that was my purpose. But what I didn't realize at the time is actually how that job made me feel was my purpose. That job gave my life meaning, but I didn't realize that. And I explored this singular focus idea of what purpose was and ended up even more confused. And I was like, how is this possible? You know, being on this path and this is not making me feel, I'm even more confused. So, I realized this years ago and I'm like, right, that is it. We have to tell people that purpose is not a thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's the why. It's not the what or where, it's the why. So you had these three epiphanies of potential careers and then you got brought back into the fold, which is wonderful. How long did you do that for?
I think I was only back in the fold for 6 months before, unfortunately, they shut the company. So I went and worked for another agency, which I didn't love. Again, it was a bit corporate, but I was doing my training. So I was happy that I had my thing. You know, I'd enrolled on my therapy course. I was doing that one weekend a month. I was continuing with my own therapy and my own self-development. So I felt like I had a path. When I decided to leave my job and set up my business, so God, at one point I was on the phone to clients in a meeting room at work, you know, trying to do both. Or saying, this is awful. I hope my boss doesn't hear this. Saying I was going to client meetings, you know, like fashion client meetings. And I was going to meet like one of my clients and all that stuff. So then I found a space. So I found a therapy space. And at the same time, so this divine thing happened. I heard about this company who they're called Mastered. And they were an accelerator for creatives. So basically photographers, fashion designers, art directors, all people in that industry who wanted to up-level their career. And they would get industry experts in to tutor them and guide them. And part of this program they offered was access to a coach. So I heard about this company. I had a friend that worked there, or not even a friend, just someone I knew. I applied and I got the job. So as well as setting up my own business, I had 2 days a week, sometimes three, coaching creative, which sort of bridged that gap for me as well. And this is, you know, I still love working with creatives because it was the world that I knew. And I was coaching all these different creatives across the world, all online. And that gave me a sort of stability as well. So, okay, I'm going to fully leave the agency. And at the same time, then I could kind of build up my private client.
Wonderful.
So that was an incredible thing for me to be able to do. Yeah.
You do therapy and coaching. Very briefly describe what both are, because I know there's a crossover and you mix modalities in what you do.
Yeah.
But I'd love to know what an integrative psychotherapist is, because that sounds quite scary.
It does sound quite scary, doesn't it?
Or very, very kind of serious.
Yeah, serious. I'll start with that. So it's the way I was trained. So the integrative part means that I didn't just train. Lots of psychotherapists have one modality. So it's psychodynamic or it's humanistic or it's, you know, this one way. I trained using lots of different ways. So I've done a bit of CBT, for example, which a lot of I've done a bit of psychodynamic. I've trained in hypnotherapy, so I bring that in. So the integrative part is just the fact that I use lots of different tools and lots of different modalities. And then the therapy and the coaching, I think because I started out doing mostly therapy and then I was doing coaching with the guys at Mastered, I love therapy, but I also love, you know, therapy is quite backward childhood looking. It's a lot around healing. It's a lot, often for people getting from a place of real just being in survival mode to being able to function, which is great. And it's necessary, I think. The coaching, I would say, is a step on from that. So it's when you're already, you know, you might be feeling a bit stuck, but you're basically functioning. Mm-hmm. There might be some things that aren't quite working. And coaching takes people from that place into really thriving and really sort of thinking, like, what are my goals? What are my higher aspirations here? What is the purpose? You know, what is my purpose? So I love doing both. And I think the way I often integrate them, if I'm doing coaching sessions, is if people are really stuck on something, what I can then do is kind of use a therapeutic technique to really work on the root causes of what they're stuck on. You know, it might be that we do some inner child work, look at through hypnosis, we might sort of take them back to a particular incident that happened as a child and really unlock that experience and release that experience. And then we can kind of go back into the coaching. So I am able to do that. And I'll always tell people that we're doing, you know, this is a bit more therapeutic, but that tends to work really well.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah. And similarly, I guess with the therapy side, I'm a little bit solution focused and a little bit practical with it as well. It's mm-hmm. like, okay, yes, we're looking at this hard stuff, you know, this difficult stuff, but what do you want? What are the practical things we can do to get you there as well? We don't exist in a bubble. Therapy is not just this thing that you do outside of your life. You have to be able to have your life as well. And
yeah, and it becomes part of your life, I guess. It's not just once a week. Yeah. Is there any kind of tips or any guidance that you could offer to, I mean, this is very general and I'm sorry for being so general, but I guess let's just trust the universe and trust the intuition in terms of what comes up. But I always love to see if there's any kind of tips and takeaways to give the audience that they can really use just now. They can take away today and start to change their lives.
Oh, yeah. Let's think of which ones might be the most accessible for people. Yeah, I think absolutely. We're in the context of people are feeling weird. You know, people are feeling confused, destabilized by what's happened. So I think some of the tips I would encourage people to do, one is mind dumping, brain dumping, journaling. What often happens, especially, you know, the events of the past year and a half often have caused anxiety for people. But when the anxiety is whirling around in our heads, there's not an awful lot we can do with it. So it's about distilling it and capturing it. So I would encourage anyone as a first step to just start to journal. Really good before you go to bed, keep a pad and pen. It's really good to do actual handwriting as well, because it connects with a specific part of your brain and that helps you with your intuition. So brain dumping is probably the number one thing I get clients to do, just to start to unravel some of the stuff and start to understand. I think another little exercise that I love is I get people to draw two circles on a page. So I'm gonna demonstrate. Okay, I'm not an artist, Vicky, so you have to bear with.
Listen, have you seen the squiggly circle in the painting behind me? I'm an abstract artist. We don't require perfection.
Okay. Two circles. The inner
so just
circle,
for people listening, because we're filming this as well for YouTube. Yes. So for people who are listening, there's a small circle inside a large circle that kind of looks like a fried egg. Right.
Absolutely. So you've got your fried egg, the yolk, so the middle bit of your fried egg. This is where you write things you can control. So this exercise is called circles of control. So when you're feeling anxious or you don't know what's going on or unmanageable, you write the things you can control in here.
What would an example of that be?
An example might be my boundaries around work, which is huge for so many people. Mm-hmm. When I go to bed, what I put into my body.
Oh my God, yes.
Tick. Who I talk to, who I engage with on social media. The self-care stuff all goes in here as well.
Which is interesting because I think we all suffer from some form of control issues at some point in our life and use destructive behaviours to control other aspects and feelings. So it's interesting when you just articulate genuinely what it is that we can actually control.
What it is we can control. The white part, the middle circle, this circle is what we can influence. It might be our communication with someone. Often a lot of our problems around people, like, you know, we can influence our relationship with someone, but we can't control it, and we certainly can't control their behavior. We can influence, perhaps it's our work-life balance, so we can put some things in there. We possibly can't control all of it.
Okay.
So it's
making that distinction between what is controllable and what we can influence, as in what we can say that we want, or how we want to behave, or how we want to be treated.
Yes.
But it involves another person or group of people.
An outside agency. Mm-hmm. Outside,
which is the pan and beyond for those who are listening.
Yes. Yeah, I like that. Outside is the things we have no control over. So it could be, I mean, a huge generalization, other people, but you might want to name those other people that you're struggling with. It might be the government. It might be your boss. You know, it might be the pandemic itself. And this is, these are conversations I've been having with clients. And basically, if you start to allocate things into these circles, what I often find is people spend so much of their time worrying about the stuff in the out of control zone. And actually, they're not really focusing on the bits they can, but they're not focusing on making sure they go to bed or
connect with that. That is just landed completely in my brain. Yeah.
Yes. Good.
Guilty.
And me too. And in doing this, what it kind of helps you to do is just reprioritize, and it's getting back that sense of like agency, because none of us have had, you know, we've all been beholden to rules and things that we might not want to do and feeling out of control with it. So if you start to take back that sense of agency, like, oh, okay, I have control over this. I'm making a choice that I'm going to do a yoga class today, and that feels good.
I love that you call it agency, because I talk about this in my book, and it's about taking responsibility, and that is responding to your ability, is taking your power back, because so many of us hand our power away to other people. We rely, which is basically what you're saying, given this fried egg and the frying pan and these different circles.
Yeah.
We rely so heavily on other people, because that's how we've been brought up, certainly in Western society. You know, we're recording this from the UK, and that's how we are brought up.
Yeah.
To hand our power over, even the beloved NHS, as much as I adore it, that whole system has created a population who have taken very little responsibility for their own health, because they will just go and get a tablet or whatever.
Absolutely.
That's another conversation, though.
No, I'm with you.
Not dissing the NHS or anyone that works for it. I have an intimate relationship with them through a number of different health things, and I'm so blessed and grateful that we have the NHS, my God. But that's just an example of how we hand our power away. So getting back into that, the yoke. And it's you know, the yoke of life. And it's interesting because that's a yoga terminology as well.
Yeah.
We're all the kind of aspects of our life that we can be in control of. And the minute you start to do that, even as you say, if it's something so small, like, you know, I'm going to go to yoga, and I'm going to have a walk after work, or in actual fact, I'm going to go and take a break. I'm going to have my coffee break. That gives you so much more confidence in your ability to start to manage the bigger picture problems. So I love
it. Really does. Like, brilliant. Start simple, start small.
Yeah.
And then the other stuff starts to take care of itself.
Yeah. And also, I guess when you do that exercise, you're not necessarily meant to brain dump it in a 5-minute session. You know, this is something that you can come back to.
Absolutely.
Over a period of time. And I hope things will jump from one to the other. Be in the frying pan, come into the yolk, vice versa.
Yeah. It's a live document. Yeah. That you can.
Brilliant. And even better that it involves drawing as an artist. I'm loving that.
I love the egg. I'm going to use that, this fried egg. I hadn't.
You can have that.
Thank you.
I have so enjoyed chatting to you, and I really appreciate you being so candid and sharing everything that happened in your life, because that is why I want to have these conversations and to chat to people that, you know, I find inspiring, but also people that I find relatable, because I think it's so important to see yourself in the people who you find inspiration from, because it then becomes achievable.
Definitely.
You know, we can all be inspired by people who are flying high and, you know, I'd like, well known, we live in a very celebrity-based culture, but I think actually the real celebrities, the real people that we should be inspired by are just, and I don't want to use the every woman, the every man, because that's to do a disservice, but everyone has a voice, everyone has a story, and everyone deserves to have that shared, and particularly somebody who's kind of followed their soul calling and has stood up and went, actually, I'm not going to go down this shitty life, that we're here for one life, and I'm not doing that. So thank you so much for joining me. It's been
a
pleasure.
Thank you. Such a pleasure.
I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode. And if you'd like to connect with me, then head over to my website, vickipaul.com, or you can find me on Instagram at @VickyJPaul. Why not take advantage of a special subscriber-only 10% discount off my personalised soul portraits? All you need to do is get in touch using the promo code PODCAST21. That's PODCAST21. And don't forget, you can buy my book, How to Be Successful, available anywhere that you buy books, or you can also get it via the link in the show notes. Make sure you hit subscribe so you don't miss the next episode. And please continue to share this podcast with anyone you think might find it useful. I'd also really love if you could write a review, because that helps myself and my guests get discovered by more kindred spirits. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.